It's nice if you have a way of identifying who is calling on your phone. You can decide whether it's a friend or a scam, a family member or a solicitation to buy or donate. How many times have you answered a call, then regretted it? Do you want new windows? Your furnace ducts clean? Your lawn aerated? Abraham got a call with the biggest test of his long life. Possibly he wished he had not answered that chilling request. Peter got invited to go up a mountain where he was terrified by a demonstration of a cleaning product even better than bleach, it says. It terrified him so much that he just kind of babbled almost incoherently, let alone be capable of making a decision of whether to buy that product or not. Abraham was tested. Peter was terrified. Jesus was transfigured. But that's not where the story ends today. These events lead to a call that you and I will have to decide on or respond to whether to take or not this Lent. We will be asked to make a decision about our own lives and whether the one calling can be trusted in our own lives. Testing, terrifying, transfiguring, and trusting. Every call from the Lord seemed like a test to Abraham. First, it was take everything you own and move to 1,000 miles away. Then later, try not to laugh when an angel promises a child in your old age for you and your wife Sarah. Then the test of no calls at all for 10 years, waiting for that promised child while you and your wife get really old. You know, in ancient Middle East culture, not to have a child is equivalent to not having a relationship with the gods. You have nothing to offer them, either in this generation or the generations to come. Speaking of offering, that son is eventually born to Abraham and Sarah and grows up strong and obedient, an overwhelming joy to his mother and father. But then out of the blue, another call to Abraham from God. Now, if someone knew what that call would be about, they would surely say, as we might, "Don't answer it, Abe." What does Abraham do? Looks like God's plan is working just fine. So he answers, "Here I am." But God says, "Abraham, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering." Now, there is nothing in the scriptures which tell us about Abraham's shock or disbelief or anguish at this demand. But I think we can imagine all of the above, can we not? I have a son, an only son, a beloved son, and I certainly would not obey such a shocking demand. But this is a different time, isn't it? In the ancient Middle East, the gods of the people do demand sacrifice of their children. That's how people show their allegiance to those gods. Maybe, brothers and sisters, we shouldn't be that shocked, considering the ways that we sometimes sacrifice our children to the gods of today, the gods of choice, or the gods of technology, or the gods of pornography, or perhaps others. Still, we can imagine Abraham declaring, "I know that's your right, Lord, but you promised a son through whom you would make a great nation of me, which would one day be a blessing to the world. Now you want me to kill my beloved son as an offering to you?" And yet, there was Abraham packing up the wood for the fire and the knife for, well, you know. What about Isaac? He has all the confidence in the world of his father's love. But when they get to Moriah, he gets the message from his father and finds out that he is the sacrifice. So, what do we see? Isaac carried the wood for the sacrifice, obediently allowed his father to tie him, climbed on the altar himself, for most certainly his 100-year-old father could not force him to do that, and then waited obediently and in silence for the deadly blow that his father was about to strike. In a movie about this event from the book of Genesis, Isaac asks his father at that very moment, is there nothing that this God cannot ask of us? And it's left unanswered. In our dark moments, perhaps there are times that feel like death, that we might forget to trust that God tests those whom he loves, because God has a plan for our lives, as he promises in Jeremiah 29, a plan for your good and not for harm, to give you a future with hope. Like Abraham, Peter had received a call from Jesus. Some local teacher got into his boat and said, "Let's go catch some fish." After a huge catch, the teacher said, "From now on, you will be catching people." Over time, Peter had come to hope that this teacher, Jesus, was the Messiah, the promised Savior. However, he had no idea what test he would have to endure. Jesus had begun to teach his disciples that the Son of Man must suffer greatly and be rejected by the elders, the priests, and the scribes, and be killed and rise after 3 days. At that point, Jesus takes 3 disciples up a high mountain, Peter and his 2 friends, James and John, and they saw the divine glory burst forth from his body. We read that his clothes became dazzling white, such as no bleach could make them. That sounds like a Tide advertisement. Peter was terrified by the glory of God in Jesus. It was too much for him. What the text tells us is that he started babbling about making tents for Jesus and Moses and Elijah so that they could stay there. Well, Abraham and Isaac must have been tempted not to do what they were asked. They must have been tempted not to trust. No matter what the cultural practices of their day, God shouldn't do that. It's just not nice. Peter was tempted to take what he saw and try to keep it for himself. We also experience the temptation to avoid the tests of our faith and to perhaps hang on to the occasional high experiences of life. There is a story about the desert fathers. It goes like this. Abbot John had prayed that all his temptations be taken from him. Having achieved this, he went to one of the elders and he said, "You see before you a man who is completely at peace." The elder told him to go out and pray that some struggle be stirred up in him. Only through his struggles would he grow in the spiritual life. After that, Abbot John only prayed that God would give him the strength to deal with his trials. And what a trial for Abraham as he reached out for the knife. At that moment, God called again through an angel. Again, Abraham answered, "Here I am." That means he was still listening, doesn't it? Even in that darkest of moments. The angel said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy. For now I know that you fear or trust in God. For you have not withheld your son, your only son." Every year on this Sunday in Lent, the church celebrates the transfiguration of Jesus on a mountain, the shining forth of the glory of God in him. Another call came, directed at Peter and James and John. "This is my beloved son. Listen to him." It says that Moses and Elijah were there, but God's voice did not say, "These are my beloved sons." This appearance of glory was the affirmation of Peter for Peter, James, and John, that Jesus is the Son of God, the chosen and the beloved, who is about to die for faithfulness to the Father, so that the world may trust and believe that God is only love. Later, these 3 will come to be overburdened with and overcome with terror and grief as they wait in the garden while Jesus sweats blood while he prays to conform his will to the divine plan for the salvation of the world. Later, they will flee from the exact same spot at Calvary, also called Moriah, where Jesus became the new Isaac, the new beloved son whose sacrifice is carried out, not by a loving father, but by the hatred and sin of the world. Later, Peter will be strengthened by the memory of the glory of the Mount of Transfiguration to proclaim to the world what they heard him say many times. "Do not be afraid. It is I." Jesus has not stopped saying, He has not stopped saying to you and I, do not be afraid, it is I. St. Paul in the second reading today asks, if God is for us, who can be against us? The answer is no one. Paul uses exactly the same language in the Greek said of Abraham. He who did not spare his own son has made us conquerors of every terror and every sin. And so what remains is for us to live in that glory, that love. Abraham didn't know exactly how the promise of blessing would be fulfilled. We do. It's Jesus Christ who gave himself up for us. He is our Isaac, who carried the wood for the sacrifice, who let himself be placed on the altar of sacrifice. The glory and the sacrifice of Jesus continues to be manifested through the saints. People like, say, Father Kolbe, who gave himself in place of a fellow prisoner at a death camp, and for a man who had a family to return to. But also in the ordinary lives of people whom we know. I have a brother who turns 65 today. Happy birthday, Paul. He's the only one of five of us who have grandchildren. He has four of them. I would love it if he came to church with me, but I can see how he pours out his life for those children and how he dedicates almost his whole life and how I know that he would die for any of them without the least hesitation. That's the obedience of Isaac. It is the love of Jesus Christ himself, Christ alive in his disciples today. While still on earth, the disciples saw the divine glory shining in the body of Jesus. While still on earth, the faithful receive his body and blood and hear the Father's voice speaking to them in the depths of their hearts. This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. Receive him. The Word of God invites us, calls us to go up the mountain with Jesus, to see his glory, and then go down the mountain and be with him in his agony, his passion, or to put it another way, to let him enter into our agony, our passion. During his trial, the governor Pilate showed Jesus, disfigured by scourging, to the people and said, "Behold the man." Today, as on that mountain, do not doubt that God the Father says to us right here and now this day, "Behold my Son, my beloved, listen to him." You can trust him with your pain, with your emptiness, with your longing, with your doubt. He has proven himself trustworthy. All that remains is that this Lent we will trust in him. Will we pick up the phone when it rings and say, "Here I am, my trust is in your love and your faithfulness"? Now you, as you listen to the readings and participate at Mass in person or via the live stream today, may say, "Okay, I know what I must do today based on the Transfiguration. I know what I must do to proclaim and to profess my trust in God." But I don't think we can do better than by starting today, pray the prayer. Jesus, I trust in you. Jesus, I trust in you. Jesus, I trust in you.